I'm John Strum, and this is Real Talk MS. It's January 25th, and we have a lot to talk about. In last week's episode of the podcast, we covered some important news coming out of the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health, where it was announced that a very large study of more than 10 million members of the U.S. Armed Forces showed that the Epstein-Barr virus is the trigger for most multiple sclerosis. And if you happen to miss last week's episode, I'll strongly recommend that you check out episode number 229. Just visit realtalkms.com and click on past episodes at the top of the homepage, or visit Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts, and you'll find episode 229. If you happen to miss it, listening to that episode of the podcast will be well worth your time. Fatigue is considered one of the most common symptoms of MS. It's estimated that 80% of the people living with MS are dealing with MS fatigue, and I think a lot of those people consider fatigue to be one of the most bothersome symptoms of MS, because fatigue is one of those symptoms that just gets in the way and keeps you from fully engaging in life. And because fatigue is one of the main causes for early withdrawal from the workforce, fatigue can also carry a very high financial penalty. Joining me today to talk about managing and reducing MS fatigue is Dr. Elizabeth Gromisch, a neuropsychologist at the Mandel Center for Multiple Sclerosis in Hartford, Connecticut. But before we get to my conversation with Dr. Gromisch, there are a few other things that you should know about. Over the past 229 episodes of Real Talk MS, I've gotten to know many of you, and many of you have heard my story and gotten to know me. But here's a fun fact that most of you don't know. I've been performing magic since childhood, and for most of my adult life, my particular specialty has been sleight-of-hand close-up magic. I'm even a member of the Magic Castle, a world-famous private club for magicians in Hollywood. Now, I don't try to keep any of this a secret, but since we talk about things related to MS, it's just never come up on the podcast. I'm bringing it up today because this Saturday, January 29th, the National MS Society is hosting a live-streamed event called MS Got Talent, and I'll be doing some magic as part of the program. It's going to be a really fun show with some amazing performances by people in the MS community, and I hope you'll join us. MS Got Talent is going to be live streamed at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, January 29th, on a couple of platforms, and you'll find a link to view the show in today's show notes. So if you're free this Saturday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, that's 4 p.m. Pacific, I hope you'll join me for what sounds like a lot of fun. And I'm planning to do something that I can guarantee you've never seen before. So don't forget to check today's show notes for that link. There's plenty of evidence that shows that early treatment leads to better outcomes for people living with MS. Studies have shown us that disease-modifying therapies delay MS progression, and that means they help preserve a better quality of life. There's also growing evidence that shows people who are ultimately diagnosed with MS actually begin experiencing symptoms years before they get that diagnosis. But it's hard to tease out those early symptoms that occur during what's called the prodromal phase of MS, because the symptoms themselves are usually very mild, not specific to MS. They may seem to have nothing to do with MS. But if clinicians could see this pattern of subtle symptoms earlier, then treatment could begin sooner. Which could mean that if someone received treatment with one of the high-efficacy disease-modifying therapies, that person might never experience the symptoms we typically associate with MS. It just may not get that far. And a research team from the University of California, San Francisco, has published the results of a study that suggests one way clinicians may be able to spot these very early patterns that lead to MS is by using a type of artificial intelligence called machine learning. In machine learning, a computer uses an algorithm to sort through huge amounts of data and identify patterns that humans can easily miss. A NASA engineer proved the value of machine learning a few years ago when, in his spare time, he trained a computer to spot patterns in space by having it look at thousands of photos taken by NASA satellites. Once the computer had trained itself, it found two planets that NASA hadn't yet discovered. So in this study, the UCSF research team trained their computer to spot patterns by first converting electronic health records to a type of graph, and then having the computer look at these graphs representing over 5,000 people with MS who had been treated at UCSF. The computer also examined data from 2 million people who had been treated at UCSF between 2011 and 2018, but these were people who didn't have MS. Using machine learning, the computer was able to identify with reasonable accuracy people who were going to be diagnosed with MS 3 years before these patients were actually diagnosed. And the computer's accuracy increased when it predicted which people were going to be diagnosed with MS 1 year before they were actually diagnosed. The good news is that the accuracy of a system like this increases over time, as more and more data is incorporated into the algorithm. The computer learns. That's where the term machine learning comes from. This is a really exciting development, and one worth keeping an eye on. There's no question that AI technology will evolve into a reliable clinical tool, not only aiding in diagnosis, but in providing a highly accurate, predictive diagnosis that can lead to very positive patient outcomes. You can be sure we'll be following this work. And if you'd like to review the details of this study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. The antimalarial drug hydroxychloroquine earned some recognition in 2020 when, without any evidence, some people mistakenly believed that it could somehow protect them from contracting COVID-19. Well, that myth has been successfully debunked in a number of studies. But hydroxychloroquine has found its way back into the news when a research team at the University of Calgary reported the results of an 18-month study which showed that hydroxychloroquine was effective in helping to slow the worsening of disability among people living with primary progressive MS. It's been suspected that the pathophysiology, big word, that is, the functional changes that accompany primary progressive MS, are connected to what we call the bad behavior of microglia. These are cells in the central nervous system that are involved in the brain's immune response. Well, it turns out that in addition to being an effective anti-malarial drug, hydroxychloroquine reduces the activity of microglia, and it's been shown to have neuroprotective effects as well. It may not be at all useful in keeping us safe from COVID-19, but because it's used as an anti-malarial treatment, we already know that hydroxychloroquine is safe and well-tolerated. And the results of this small study seem to demand further study in a larger randomized clinical trial. If you'd like to review the details of the study, you'll find a link in today's show notes. While we're talking about promising news in treating progressive MS, there's some encouraging news coming from Harvard's Brigham and Women's Hospital, where the FDA has authorized a second patient to be enrolled in a special access program that's testing foralumab, a nasal spray for treating secondary progressive MS. Foralumab is an experimental antibody treatment that suppresses the immune response, which imaging has shown, and this should sound familiar to you, imaging has shown that it reduces the activity of microglia. Now, the phase 1 clinical trial for foralumab has already been completed, showing that the treatment is safe and well-tolerated, and a phase 2 trial will be started soon. This special access program is sometimes called compassionate use. It's a way that the FDA allows for an individual patient to receive an investigational medical product because they're facing an immediate life-threatening condition or a serious disease or condition that hasn't responded to all other treatments, so there are no other options. The first patient who was granted access to ferolumab by special access program is midway through the 6-month treatment regimen, and we can expect more clinical data once that patient's treatment has been completed. So far, the results are being described as very promising. Besides studying MS, Tiziana Life Sciences, the company that formulated the ferolumab nasal spray, is also planning clinical trials to explore the effectiveness of ferolumab in treating Crohn's disease and type 1 diabetes. This is one more potential treatment for progressive MS that we're going to be watching. If you're living with MS, you're over 18, and you think you might be interested in participating in a virtual support group with a focus on positive psychology, then you're invited to participate in a study that's designed to evaluate the effectiveness of a virtual support group that focuses on positive psychology for people living with MS. The group is being facilitated by a graduate nursing student at the Duke University School of Nursing Doctor of Nursing program, so the group's going to be run by a certified positive psychology practitioner and MS-certified nurse practitioner. The virtual group will meet twice a month for 1 hour. There's no cost to participate, and this study doesn't test drugs or other treatments. It's only looking at the effectiveness of this virtual support group itself. To volunteer to participate in this group or to get more information, you can contact Tanya Barcinas by email at tanya.barcinas, B-A-R-C-I-N-A-S, at duke.edu, or by phone at area code 919-638-0889. And I'll include Tanya's contact information in today's show notes. Support groups have been shown to be beneficial to people living with MS. But one of the things that can keep someone from participating in a support group is MS fatigue. It can keep you from participating in a support group. It can keep you from participating in family activities. It can even keep you from going to work and earning a living. Joining me in a moment to talk about strategies to manage and even reduce MS fatigue is my guest, Dr. Elizabeth Gromisch. Fatigue is not only one of the most common MS symptoms, it can be one of the most bothersome because fatigue is one of those symptoms of MS that can just get in the way of engaging in, well, virtually any aspect of life. When MS fatigue strikes, it always demands your attention, right? Well, my guest today is Dr. Elizabeth Gromisch, a neuropsychologist at the Mandel Center for Multiple Sclerosis in Hartford, Connecticut. And we're talking about strategies to assess and manage MS-related fatigue. Welcome to the podcast, Dr. Gromisch.
Thank you for having me.
So what is fatigue and what are the different kinds of fatigue that someone might experience?
So the official definition that we use for fatigue is a subjective lack of physical and or mental energy that is perceived by the individual or caregiver to interfere with usual and desired activities. So it's more than feeling tired at the end of the day. It's a drain on your energy reserves that makes it incredibly difficult to do activities you want to or need to do. So there are several different kinds of fatigue that can occur. So the first is primary MS fatigue, which is the result of changes to the central nervous system. So what happens is the messages being sent by your brain and spinal cord get disrupted, causing your body to work harder. This extra effort needed for functioning can lead you to feel more fatigue. Then there's secondary MS fatigue, which is the result of living with MS. So for instance, if someone has bladder issues, they may be waking up a lot during the night to use the bathroom, which causes problems with their sleep and resulting in poor sleep, and that in turn can cause fatigue. So it's also important to note that people with MS can have fatigue caused by other medical conditions, So important to bring up your fatigue issues to your healthcare provider.
How is MS fatigue different from other kinds of fatigue?
So there are several features that make MS fatigue different from non-MS fatigue. So MS fatigue is more likely to be severe and interfere in your daily activities. It can occur daily, even in the morning, after a good night's sleep. It can start suddenly and worsen as the day goes on. And also a really important feature is that MS fatigue can get worse in hot and humid conditions.
Fatigue affects about 80% of the people who are living with MS. Why is it such a common symptom?
So it's likely a combination of several different factors. So the first is the physiological changes caused by MS. Because the body has to work a lot harder to function due to those disruptions in the central nervous system, it can result in a buildup of MS fatigue. And then a lot of symptoms of MS can contribute to fatigue or make it worse. So we briefly talked about bladder issues, but can be other symptoms like sleep problems, like insomnia, pain issues, depression, the increased cognitive demands that can happen with MS, and muscle weakness can all contribute to fatigue.
Because there are different kinds of fatigue, how can someone tell whether their fatigue is related to their MS or something else?
That's a great question. So first, looking for those signs of MS fatigue is a good first step. So for instance, if you're noticing your fatigue is getting worse when it's hot or worsen as the day goes on, that could be a good indicator that it's related to your MS. One thing that's really important to remember is talking to your healthcare provider about your fatigue concerns. Because as part of your medical care, we want to do a workup and really see what's going on in your life. So we're going to take a look at your medical history, your lab work, as well as your lifestyle to see what those factors are and how they might be contributing. Because not only is that going to tell us what's causing your fatigue, but it's going to help us come up with a plan together so we can manage it.
Because fatigue is one of the invisible symptoms of MS, it can be difficult for other people to understand what someone with MS might be feeling or actually going through. How might someone explain fatigue to a person who doesn't have MS?
Analogies are great in this situation because it can help you really explain to someone else who might not get it. So a great one for fatigue is batteries. So everybody has a battery in terms of how much energy we have to do things. So for many people with without MS, their batteries are fully charged or nearly full. So they don't have problems having enough energy to do their daily activities. However, MS can drain that battery and make it harder to do things. So it may feel like your battery is never quite full or it drains much more quickly. So you need more time to recharge before you can tackle an activity. But the really important part of it is it doesn't mean that you don't want to do something. You just don't have enough charge to do it.
Depression is another common symptom of MS. How do mood changes like anxiety or depression impact fatigue?
So not only are emotional changes common in MS, but they can also cause or make fatigue worse. So for example, fatigue is a symptom of depression. And when we're evaluating someone, we really try to tease that apart. Is the fatigue resulting from the depression or is the depression causing the fatigue? And when we're feeling anxious or depressed, it can affect how we think about things. And oftentimes when we're in that mood state, we can fall into an unhelpful thinking patterns. So for instance, we may focus on the negatives in our lives, really, omitting the positive things that are happening. Or maybe we're thinking about the worst case scenario, which can make us more anxious. So these thought processes can make our fatigue and our mood worse, resulting in a negative cycle. So when we're having these kind of thought processes and we're experiencing depression and anxiety, it can be really helpful to talk to a mental health professional who can help us identify these negative thinking patterns and ways to handle them, like challenging these thought processes and replacing them with more helpful thinking patterns.
I'm wondering, is it possible for a disease-modifying therapy or other MS symptom management medication to actually cause fatigue?
Yes, that is a possibility. So certain medications can have side effects that contribute to MS fatigue. So if that's something you're concerned about, it's really important to talk to your healthcare provider about that. So they can review all the medications you're currently taking and decide if there need to be changes. And it may be switching to a new medication or changing the time of day that you're taking it. And when also going over your medications with your provider, it's really important to mention any over-the-counter or supplements you're taking to make sure there's no interactions that also might be leading to the fatigue. But one thing that's really important to keep in mind is even if you are suspecting that your DMT or another medication is causing your fatigue, never stop taking a medication before talking to your provider.
Let's look at ways to manage or even reduce fatigue. Can you share some strategies for managing MS fatigue with us?
There are a lot of different strategies, and the key is finding one that works for you. So it's really building your toolbox, because some days some techniques might work better for you than others. So one that's really helpful is fatigue tracking. So that's making a note of what your level of fatigue is, using something as simple as a scale of 0 to 10. And you can note that at different times of the day. So that can let you know days that you or times that you have more energy, which can help you schedule activities you want to do. It can also let you know if certain strategies are working for you. And tied into that is activity planning. So this lets you schedule time to do activities so you're not overburdening yourself and draining that battery. So this can involve spreading out energy taxing activities, as well as putting in time for rest, because having those breaks is really important when we're dealing with MS fatigue. Activity planning can also help you schedule time to do enjoyable activities that you may be putting off because of your fatigue. And there are things called energy conservation strategies. So these are things like making changes to your environment. So sitting down when you're doing tasks rather than standing up, which uses a lot of energy, using tools, breaking down tasks into smaller steps, and proper body positioning. So using good posture when we're sitting or standing. And then on the psychological side, things like cognitive behavioral strategies, like thought challenging exercises, sleep monitoring, and relaxation techniques.
Are there any medications to manage fatigue?
So there are some off-label medications, and that means they're not FDA approved specifically for MS fatigue. So those are things like stimulants, like methylphenidate, antivirals like amantadine, and wakeful promoting agents like modafinil. So while people with MS may be prescribed these medications, it's important to note that there is limited evidence on their effectiveness in the MS population. But there are other alternatives. So those non-pharmacological treatments we're talking about, those different strategies, those have been found to be really helpful.
And what about non-pharmacological treatments?
Yes, so absolutely. Things like energy conservation strategies, there's a lot of evidence for that. Cognitive behavioral therapy can really be really helpful, but also physical activity programs. So exercise is a really great thing you can do when you have fatigue. And that's just good for MS in general.
And how about diet? Are there any specific foods or drinks that can help offset fatigue?
So if we don't drink enough water or if we rely too much on caffeine and sugary drinks, that can lead to more fatigue. So you can't just go to that energy drink to keep us perked up. However, choosing healthy options like protein-rich foods and complex carbohydrates can help us feel more energized. And I should note there's some new research coming out that's really promising on specific diets for MS fatigue. So there are two diets that were recently studied in a project by the University of Iowa, looking at the Swank diet and the Walls elimination diet. So the Swank diet is a low saturated fat diet. So that involves limiting your intake of saturated and unsaturated fats and eliminating certain foods like processed foods that contain saturated fat and red meat for the first year. The Walls elimination diet is a modified Paleolithic diet. It excludes dairy, legumes, and grains, as well as highly processed food. And both of these diets really emphasize consumption of fruits and vegetables, which is good for us no matter what. But one thing that's really important to note before you start any types of these diets is talk to your healthcare provider. So they may refer you to a registered dietitian who can help you navigate these different diets, because sometimes they can be restrictive, and we want to make sure you're getting the proper nutrients.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned checking with your healthcare provider. Which healthcare provider should someone be working with to help manage their MS fatigue?
So since MS fatigue is so multifactorial, you're going to do best with a multidisciplinary team. So you're going to have your primary MS healthcare provider. There's a lot of other specialties that can be helpful for MS fatigue. So for instance, an occupational therapist is a great person to have on your team because they can help you with the energy conservation strategies and making environmental modifications. So these can be changes in your home or in your workplace to help you conserve energy. We talked a little bit about physical activity. So having a physical therapist can be helpful because they can help you design a physical activity program to help prevent deconditioning. And then a psychologist like me is also very helpful because we can work with you on doing cognitive behavioral therapy to help change some of those negative thinking habits, maybe doing some sleep monitoring and teaching you some relaxation techniques.
Well, if we move from the clinical to the research side of the question, I want to congratulate you on receiving the National MS Society's Harry Weaver Scholar Award. Can you tell us a little bit about the research on MS fatigue that you're leading?
Yes, thank you. We're really excited about this project. So we're designing a fatigue self-management program called Managing My MS, My Way. So this is teaching people with MS different strategies for managing their fatigue through a mobile application, a lot of the ones that we've talked about today. So we're using the concept of self-management. So this puts the focus on the person with MS. So they're the expert on their MS and they know what works and doesn't work. And they're also the ones who are managing their MS on a daily basis. So the program is to focus on helping them find fatigue management strategies that work for them and fit into their lifestyles. So we're using a combination of cognitive behavioral therapy and energy conservation strategies and putting it on a platform that persons with MS can access anytime they want to. So they can do it on their phone, their tablet, or computer, whatever device they have. And one thing that makes our project unique is it's being designed by people with MS for people with MS. So the reason we're even doing a fatigue management program over the internet is because that's what our patients ask for, and we want to make sure we're meeting their needs. So in terms of where we are on this project, we recently met with people with MS to discuss the different fatigue management strategies to include the program, getting their feedback on ones that we proposed, as well as the ones they've used in the past. And right now we're building the application. So the next steps is to test the application with people with MS to make sure it's easy to use. And then after we test it in a clinical trial and see if it's an effective treatment, we hope to eventually make it available for all people with MS to use.
And I'm hoping you're going to come back on this podcast and tell us about that when it's ready.
Absolutely.
Well, Dr. Elizabeth Gromisch, thank you for all you do to improve the lives of people living with MS. And thanks for talking with me today.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
That's going to wrap up this episode of Real Talk MS. Real Talk MS is powered by the National MS Society. And you can share this episode of the podcast by letting your friends or family members know that all they have to do is point their web browser at realtalkms.com/230. You'll find that link in today's show notes so you can easily copy and paste it right into an email or text. And I hope you'll join me this Saturday, January 29th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. Pacific Time for MS Got Talent. You'll see some great performances, we'll raise some money for the National MS Society, and it's going to be a lot of fun. You'll find the link for the live stream in today's show notes. I'm John Strum. Thanks for listening. Stay safe and make healthy choices.